I was in Alberta. I was when I lived in the Rocky Mountains. I moved into my place in the Rocky Mountains after a hunter had been living there, hunter left my freezer full of bison and elk and just all kinds of like the meat was like. Perfect. It was like a dark red, like dark ruby red.
Well, that's what they told me, because I was in Montana this weekend and I had some the guy who was hosting, he was like, well, what do you want to eat? What do you guys want to eat? And I was like, hey, take me to the stuff. He's like, you want to eat bison? I was like, let's eat bison. So I'd never had bison, and I had a filet mignon of bison. So they tell me that it's actually more healthier than actually like cow meat, because the bison is in shape.
Okay. All right.
So it's like it's a healthier meat to eat. And it was delicious.
Because of all the docile cows. You know that the cow really wants to be out there running and being
safe. They don't do anything. Yeah. The cows are just lazy, but the bison is like strong. So it's like it's a better, healthier meat to eat, you know. So it was delicious. Never been to Montana before.
Right. Yeah, man. And you loved it?
Yeah, it was fun. It was great. It was like, it's kind of like, it's actually only 2.5 hours from LA. So it's a very quick trip, you know, you get there. And like, what I realized is like, it's actually like a hidden thing, or like there's this, not hidden, but it's like a resort for rich, like billionaire people that I think Ted Turner created a while back, the guy who creates CNN, you know, and TBS and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it's this huge resort for like rich people, like Bill Gates and Oprah and Ben Affleck was there actually this weekend with J-Lo. Right.
He was getting
some of the bison.
You got me so excited when you told me, and I love that you followed it up with, because I went, oh wow, you've got inside knowledge, and then you casually went, well, it's on Twitter.
It's on Twitter,
And I thought, don't ruin that for me. I like that you told me. I'm like, Francisco's come back.
Like Ben Affleck is texting me. He's like, hey, bro, I just missed you in Montana. I was with the J-Lo. We should have come party. I was like, I was like, sorry, Ben. I have to do my show in Spanish, you know, so I'm not going to be able to make it.
Well, this is what makes me realize that I like things more as long as my friend tells me. So it can be on Twitter. But as long as it's read, like you can report Twitter to me, and it would make me more excited than scrolling through it and going, "Oh right, Ben Affleck's with J-Lo, fine."
Yeah. Like back in the days before Twitter, that's what you like. You want people to like, "Oh, I didn't know that," because now everybody knows. Yeah, because you want somebody to tell you while you're.
Yeah, I want it to be a friend. I don't want to be given information by enemies. Or anybody else. So as long as it's like you telling me, I feel like I'm in the know.
Whose enemy is giving you J-Lo and Ben Affleck information? I mean, what kind of enemy is that? Is that your enemy? It's like, I hope JJ hates you. By the way, Ben Affleck is back with J-Lo. Like,
yeah, they probably have to be really angry at me at the time or something. Like, God damn it, JJ, I shouldn't be spending this time explaining this to you. I have gossip about J-Lo and Ben Affleck to look at. And I'd be like, what? You say J-Lo and Ben Affleck are together? Thank you, enemy, for telling me. That's basically how I can see it working out.
Yeah, they're back, and they're back in Montana. But yeah, I think definitely it's a thing you should check out, Montana. I think it's a great place to visit.
We went from, where was it? In Washington.
That's a different state.
The name. No. That's exactly what I'm about to tell you. Spokane. That's right. We got an Uber once because we missed our flight. So we had, and our next show was in Montana.
Wow. So you got an Uber from Spokane to where? What part of Montana?
It was like the day. It took forever. And then what I remember about Montana is that we had a...
Whose Uber was this that did this, by the way?
It was Jim Jeffries.
So he was like a fan of Jim or something?
No. It was the Jim Jeffries tour. So it was pretty important that we get to our next destination, and we couldn't, and we had missed our flight, and we couldn't get any more flights. So we ended up taking an Uber all the way across.
Yeah, no, but that's what I'm saying. Because if I'm driving Uber and I see that request, I'd be like, No, I mean, I know you're making a lot of money, but it's like, I'm gonna travel a day with some people that I don't know.
He did.
That guy did. He did.
He did.
How much was that Uber thing? Can you share that?
I can't remember, but it was a lot. It wasn't cheap. It was more than the sum of two flights. Let's say that.
Yeah, so it was like $600.
And he didn't know who we were either, and because he asked if he could put comedy on at one point. He was like, do you guys like stand up? And we were like, yeah, sure. So he put some stand up on for.
That's crazy. So like, man, and then but then drive back. So what does that guy, Uber guy, just start like he moves and then he's like, well, now I live in Montana. Like, yeah, I'm basically. I'm not going to go back. Press the Uber thing and it's like, he starts getting rides and he's just like, his wife is like, where are you? It's like, oh, I live in Montana now because I had to take some people from.
Yeah,
from
I think that's basically how it works, Ben. But beautiful. What a beautiful place. The hotel that we were at had a lake in behind it, and there was people fly fishing. I've never seen fly fishing out there. I was like, wow, this is.
Which is a very, like, you have to, like, it's a very rustic thing. Like, it's not like it has a thing. I don't know why I'm doing like.
Oh, yeah. It's got a, yeah, it was a skill to it. It was there's a snappy, like a wristy skill to it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, very cool. So yeah, I'm glad you had fun, buddy.
It was fun.
And you're fully fed.
Yes, it was fully fed. Well, I mean, and today's episode, we actually have a well traveled comedian.
Yes, we got Aisha Alpha, who is outstanding. It's the 1 year anniversary of her special, All the Parts, which is available on YouTube and stuff, and we've been sending out links for it all week. And she's got a great podcast as well herself called the Shout Out Show, which is all positive vibes and stuff. And I've been looking forward to having her on our show for a long time now. So I'm glad the slot has rolled around that we got Aisha on. And she was awesome, isn't she? She's an awesome talker, awesome conversationalist, and she's got awesome life experiences. Yeah. Not to mention, she's probably the pregnant lady that we've talked to the longest in our lives.
Yeah. So I think she might be the first pregnant guest that we had, right?
We can make that assumption. She's the first pregnant guest that's allowed us to know.
Told us, yeah, and that showed us. But also, it's great too because she's like she was born in Nigeria, but then lived in Canada, and then also now lives in LA, but also travel everywhere. So she's like, she has so much like, and she had a great advice. Like, one, I think that to me that's been the best travel advice that I think, or maybe one of the best ones I think for all the episodes that we've done.
Definitely,
I have to say.
Definitely top five. Cracking advice, cracking life experience. I mean, I guess we should just get to it, eh?
Yeah, let's do it. Bye, hello.
Aisha Alpha with us, man.
Hi.
Aisha, I mean, I know you got tons of credits to your name, but off the bat, I would just like to mention it's the 1 year anniversary of your album that you released last year, All the Parts. Yeah. And you know, we're happy to celebrate that with you in a ways here on our podcast. That's why you've joined us, right? Of course.
Yeah, okay. Well, so now that's done. You guys, this has been such a trip. Bye.
I also do like the other you mentioned your podcast, right? The shout out show, which is, I think it's great because it's all about positivity and everything that you like in the world and giving kudos to things that you like. And I have to say, that's kind of I mean maybe it's more positive than us, but Francisco and I, when we started our podcast, we made that agreement as well. We were like, we want to keep it positive, we want to send out good vibes, what do people want to know about, instead of this trend of ranting and politicizing everything that's been happening over the last 4 years. So we feel kindred spirits with you in a way.
Well, I feel like anything that started in the last year and a half, everyone's just like, can we just do something that's positive? Can we just have one outlet that's good? So we started ours in April of last year as an Instagram live Then it turned into a show on Dynasty Typewriters platform. And then we just turned it into a podcast. But it's the same general premise, like positivity. And then we have someone come on and give us a mantra. And sometimes they're super deep and amazing. And sometimes they're like hilarious. And yeah, it's great. It's super fun. It's a good outlet. So I'm excited to be here for a positive outlet as well.
Yeah. Man. It's gonna be
our positive outlet is traveling and the arts. That's
what we do. I'm so like, oh, let's talk about traveling and the arts. Yeah. I was gonna
try to say actually every week we talk about pregnancies. And the way they
I've got you covered for all of these.
That's positive.
Yeah.
Like it's positive, right? It's positive.
I'm assuming. Yeah, no, I'm just saying it was positive. That test was positive.
There we go.
Oh, thank God. Well, yeah, congratulations are in order, and this is baby number two.
Baby number two. The first one just got put to sleep, and very much hoping that I don't hear any crying during this. This is baby number two,
which is so wild because I mean, the last time I saw you perform live. I don't feel that I don't wouldn't even know if baby number one was on the way, maybe or not. But it was.
I wasn't even married.
Okay, so this it happened fast, didn't it? Because I look at your old materials.
Oh my god, we got married in October of 2018, and went on a honeymoon and got pregnant. And I was I'm no spring chicken. So I was like, you know, it's going to take a while. So we'll start trying. We'll have like 6 months to a year of just like us in learning to love each other we're pregnant now.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Great. Good.
Too late to love each other. Now we're going to do this.
I hope that this is the one because we're in it now. And then we were like, well, there's nothing else happening right now. Let's make another one.
Might as well.
Yeah, I mean, is that good timing, or is it even more worrisome to try to have a healthy pregnancy in a time of a pandemic?
We were staying home anyway. We were like the super uber responsible people who were like, we're not going out. We're not doing anything. When we went out, we wore masks. Like, we legit were already staying home so much that it didn't really matter.
Just like us.
Yeah. And then I ended up having to be on bed rest for part of it. So like I legit couldn't leave my house. I couldn't leave the bed. So I was like probably the most disciplined person in all of quarantine. Right. Listening to this. I was like, where am I going? Someone bring me food. Like I'm not going anywhere, you know? I mean, like, I don't know. There's never a good or a bad time, I don't think.
Nah, I mean, you just gotta do it. It's like anything in life. It's like you can't plan too much. I mean, you can plan something, but it's like, you cannot just, nothing's ever going to be perfect.
This day I'm going to get pregnant. And then on this day, the baby's going to happen. And then it's just, it's
that's not too much. Go. Yeah.
You can't just put the baby on a shelf and go, I'll incubate it later. This is too busy right now.
Cut to 20 years from now. And that'll probably be a real thing that you can
do.
That's true. Yeah. Do you have the spare time now? Just to
When is the new baby come out? I don't know how to say it. I don't know how to talk to pregnant
women. What is that thing? Get out of here.
This is going to be for all the lessons.
Sorry,
learn how to talk to pregnant ladies. Here we go. Welcome to the episode.
It'll be sometime probably mid-June-ish. Right. We'll see. I mean, who knows? Things get pushed, things get different, but yeah, I'm what did we say, JJ? I'm heavily pregnant. I'm a heavily pregnant lady.
Yeah, because this is true for our viewers might enjoy this, but I don't mind candidly saying yes. Out of concern for talking about things in the wrong way, I called Aisha on Thursday or Friday, and I went, hey, look, I'm gonna start promoting this. Am I allowed to call you heavily pregnant? Because I mean, you call yourself heavily pregnant, but is it? I cited the example of like when you're from town and you can slag off that town, you can be mean about that town, but as soon as somebody else shows up who's not from the town and they say something about it, then you're like, hey, buddy, this is our town. You can't say that. I was Aisha, you're very candid on your Twitter and social media. You're very candid about the experiences you're going through, and you're very candid about summing up yourself.
Well, I was like, and I just so liked the idea that if I was like, yeah, you can say whatever, it's fine. I'm totally not precious about it. And then I come on here and you're like, so here's this big fat cow whale.
Yeah.
An alien in her. And I was like, whoa, I mean, yeah, like I think it's one of those things when you're a public person, right? Like we go on stage and we talk about our lives. I talk about my husband. I talk about like now having kids and stuff. And I'm like, there's a few things that I'm very, very private about. And that's like details about my kids. I don't put them on social media. I don't do any of that stuff. You know, I'm not the person who like posts a picture of my baby the day they're born with all their information.
I like that.
It's like, do you want your baby's identity also, to be stolen?
Yeah, that's true. And also like when they're newborns, they're not, nobody looks good. Like, I mean, like, I would say that, like, wait till, like, it's like, you know, a couple of months, it's, you know, like,
you're, when they
you
know how that. To smile and stuff.
Yeah, like, yeah. Not something like, hey, it's like, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm cool to talk about. I mean, and then the shifts in the way that I travel from when I was an independent single lady doing comedy tours and all this kind of stuff to now being a married mom is like, this is something people need to know about.
I'm very excited to hear about this stuff because I don't even know where to start with a question about like how your life has changed. I mean, you mentioned that now with the second baby, things are a bit different, but it doesn't get easy, does it? I don't imagine. I'm going through my mind now. I've never seen a pregnant woman in public just motoring everywhere and just handling life.
Or like just like smiling and like totally hair done perfectly, no perspiration. Like anybody who's like that, they're on something. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
But it has to be something. They have to be. There's something else going on. But it's really having a kid. Obviously, you know when you're going to have like a kid that things are going to change and shift. But the shifts and change in your life are so monumental that nobody can tell you all of them, right? And it's always different for each person.
Yeah, you're gonna have to learn on your own. It's kind of like travel. It's like traveling. Like anybody can tell you, yeah, you're gonna. But you travel by yourself. That's when you really learn other stuff that you could have like prepared yourself a year out of it, and you're never. Yeah.
Yeah, and I used to love like I'm a very international person. Like I was born in Nigeria. I've traveled all around Canada and the States. I've traveled overseas. I lived in Asia for a long time. You know, have traveled and lived in France for a bit. Like I've done a ton of traveling and I've done a ton of traveling by myself where it's just literally been like a backpack with all of my worldly possessions or a carry-on, you know, and you're going internationally and stuff. And I love it. Like I love traveling so much. And I love traveling by myself because then you have nobody else to worry about. You're on your way to your hotel. You want to stop somewhere else? You go stop somewhere else. You want to change your trip? You change your trip. Like
you can want to sleep in. You want to sleep in. You want to do anything that day. You do that.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah. And then, you know, I got married and that even was a concession where I was like, so now I have to think about what you want to do on a honeymoon.
Yeah. You have to live with somebody as well.
This is the first person I've ever lived with too.
And let me ask you.
Really? Wow, that's a
quick question about the whole trap. When you travel, did you ever bring anything with you when you were traveling that was like very like a sentimental or like a superstitious when you were traveling?
Oh, I always like to guess at the start of this one. Francisco asked the question, and my guess is so we're dealing with. She used to play a lot of sports and which I consider sports to be a superstitious, like a lot of athletes are superstitious, but considering that you've done a lot of traveling, that might negate it, but I'm going to go with superstition. I'm going to say Aisha is a superstitious person.
Very superstitious. I used to be terrified of flying when I was like a teenager, but I still used to fly. And so I used to take, on one of my big trip to France when I was 16, I took my boyfriend's rugby jersey and like wore that. So I was like, this will give me comfort. It'll be like, you know, and then I, you know, once I got over the fear of flying, I was like, I don't need this shit. Like, let's go.
Right.
But
it would also be weird if you were broken up with a boyfriend and you still be carrying.
I mean, we're still good friends, honestly.
He's the father of my baby. It's like, oh, okay.
I still have that. rugby jersey though, because it's a very good quality rugby jersey that I really love.
Is your husband jealous?
Not at all. Oh my god, he doesn't have a
jersey. He doesn't know about it. That's maybe he doesn't
know. You mean that thing you've been wearing?
You keep wearing that. It's like, yeah, that's, I love that, but I never play rugby. It was soccer. Remember? Soccer.
And it says love of my life. So I don't know.
Yeah.
No, but now I don't think I have many superstitious things, like, or superstitions or things that I bring with me. But like when I would travel by myself, I had the routine down, you know, of like how I packed and what I packed and all that kind of stuff. So that kind of felt like ritualistic almost at times, where you're like, you know exactly how many shirts you need for this. You know exactly which shirts travel well. You know what you want to wear on the plane to feel comfortable, like all that kind of stuff. So, but yeah, now all of that is just, oh my gosh, it's just out the window.
Yeah.
So you don't have time for superstitions now.
No, I mean, for sure. That's whatever the superstitious thing is. If I brought that rugby jersey, it would be pooped on. It would be thrown up on. It would be forgotten somewhere.
To wrap like, the baby. Or
yeah. It'd be a new diaper when you run out of them when you're like delayed. Yeah. It's good. Just, it was a lot. But yeah, I think that there's traveling on your own is just the creme de la creme. Like I dream now of traveling, just taking a trip anywhere. I don't even care where it is. Take a trip by myself where I just bring a carry-on and then I get to be in a hotel by myself and wear like a hotel robe and drink coffee in bed until noon.
That's actually what my girlfriend actually, because when I went to my first road gig, was to go to I stayed in a hotel by myself and I woke up like really late because I was like, because we have a dog and a cat and they're always annoying. So it's like, And she's like, oh, really? And now she's like, so now she's going to, this week is just her grandma's coming to visit like by Barstow, like, you know, Vegas. Right. So she's going to go and she's like, oh, so you want me to come with you? And she's like, no, I want the hotel by myself to sleep. Yeah, like like literally what you just said. Just want to
my
be
husband's
in the bed.
Like not a sleep-in guy, so he's like, "I'll come with you," and I was like, "No, you're not invited though. Yeah, like, you don't get to come on this trip." Where I'm like, "All I need is one night, just one night."
Which is great. I think that's my time. That should be done. I think for both, you know, like, hey, totally. I need one night, you know,
That's good. So considering that you're heavily pregnant, as we say, they didn't have to do it like that. I don't know why.
I don't even know what that is.
Does that mean like I'm just actually not pregnant at all? I just ate too many tacos.
Since you're wearing a pillow, since you're heavily pregnant, what is the longest? Like, is there a distance cap that you're looking at? You know, generally, I don't know.
Like for being pregnant.
I don't understand the question.
In your current condition, in the being pregnant, what is the furthest journey that you could comfortably? I'm asking on behalf of all men who don't know the answer.
I think that for like, if it was just me traveling, I'm pretty good with travel. So like, as long as if I'm pregnant, as long as I'm on an aisle seat and I can get to the bathroom, I'm pretty fine. I'm like, I could probably travel overseas if I wanted to. And I mean, especially if I could get like a direct flight, like, you know what I mean? From here directly somewhere.
Yeah.
No problem. I can sleep easily on the plane, all that kind of stuff. But like at this point, there's certain, you can't travel internationally past a certain point when you're pregnant. Like some airlines won't let you travel at all. So there's a whole thing where you have to bring like a doctor's note and they have to say how many weeks pregnant you are. And because what nobody about, wants like, to deliver in the air.
What about like when you start traveling now with your kids or like what, how do you, cause I mean, obviously you did it with your, when you were young, like what places did you go? Like
I'm
how did,
still young, Francis.
Yeah, I'm sorry. when you were a baby, you were a little kid, like your family holidays, like, I mean, like, I wanted to know, like, where did you go that? But also, how are you going to plan doing it now that you have your own family? You know?
Yeah, I mean, my parents traveled a ton with us, my brother and I, when we were babies, which I look back now and I'm like, they are insane people. Like, they traveled from Australia to Nigeria with my brother as, like, a babe. And then traveled from Nigeria to Canada with my brother as, like, a toddler and me as a baby. And I'm like, you know, and that was what, like in the 80s, you know? Yeah. So like there wasn't as many, there weren't in-flight movies.
They're
and
all planes. Like,
yeah, and
old
planes. And,
like, and that's a lot of connections too. That's,
oh my God. Yeah, there's no direct flights from Lagos to Winnipeg, you know?
Yeah.
That's not what's happening. But yeah, and I mean, I guess it also, like, it was a different time where, like, you didn't have to bring, like, a car seat. I never had a car seat, you know, and that kind of stuff. The safety stuff wasn't there. But, you know, when we traveled with our first kid when he was, I think, 6 weeks old. I went home for my good friend's wedding, and I was part of, like, one of the MCs, so I had to, like, be there. And the amount of stuff alone, like, this is a babe who, like, was strapped to me, slept most of the way. That part was easy, right? Like, that now it's not gonna be easy when he's, you know, gonna be a toddler when we travel next, and he wants to do things and can talk and stuff. But, like, the baby part was easy, and they're free, so it's not even like there's a cost for the baby.
That's true,
but just all the stuff, like, you need to be able to change them so many times. Babies poop so much, and like, change them on a plane, which is not a comfortable. And
where,
like,
do you go in the to the bathroom?
You go to the, you have to go to the bathroom.
But how do you, I mean, like, I can't even fit there by myself. How do you fit in a baby?
This is
there?
The question.
I think you prop them up on the sink, don't you?
It's so funny because I had to do it because my husband is taller and, like, he can barely fit in, and then he has to crouch down. And so, like, he went in one time and he was like, I don't even know where the change table is, because the way he stood, it blocked where the change table was. So I had to go.
There's a change table in the
Some
in
of
airport?
Them have change tables in the plane. And you can ask, and, like, they'll tell you if it has one in the front or the back or whatever. But, you know, the next time you see a parent
I would get caught bending over a toilet seat with a baby just propped on the toilet seat.
I've changed my baby in the weirdest places. And, like, you just do it because, like, you know, it's your kid and you have to. But it's not. And
also, at that point, you're already, like you have it down. Like, it's not like you're, like, learning, like, well, how do
we were still learning at 6 weeks. I feel like we were, you know, you're, like, sleep deprived, and it's, I mean, yeah, you do know how to change a diaper, but it's like, holy cow, you have the sleep deprivation for new parents. We had to wake up every 2 hours to feed our kid because he had, like, some jaundice stuff. So if you can imagine being exhausted and then waking up every 2 hours and, like, doing something and then trying to go back to sleep and then you know what I mean? Like, all But it wasn't even, like, the baby takes up no space. You don't even have to bring food for him because I was breastfeeding, right? So, like, the food is me. The baby's feet is me. But, like, you got to bring a stroller. You got to bring a car seat. You got to bring the car seat adapter. You've got to bring all these, like, change of clothes. Like, the amount, like, we packed for him and almost forgot to bring anything for ourselves. You know? It was crazy. It's just insane. And airports are not set up to, we were, like, buying tickets to go in lounges because it's like, you know, like, we're like, it's worth the $60.
Which JJ doesn't like in. Lounges. I'm a lounge guy. I'm always, I'm a members club. I'm always there. I'm always
good.
Hanging in there until I get to the plane. And, you know, I love it. I mean,
why don't you like them, JJ?
I'm confident that if I had a baby, I would pay for a lounge. But I've always found the lounge experiences, I've always found it lackluster and kind of not as valuable as just getting people to leave me alone. So my opinion has always been to hunker down close to the departure lounge instead of seeking out the, you know, the extra lounge that cost $80 or whatever. But I wouldn't argue against if you had a child and needed a better comfort zone, Francisco. I'm all for that.
Well, and before, I mean, I used to travel so much that I, for Air Canada, had the free access to the lounge all the time. It was when I was, especially when you're traveling by yourself, I'm like, Air Canada, their lounges are fantastic.
Yeah.
And you have access to, like, United and all these places. And then you get like free booze if you're a drinker. I'm like, this is great. I can have a couple glasses of wine. I can have some snacks and then get on the plane. It was great.
Yeah, that's the point. You know,
now, like, I'm like, not having wine in there. I'm just like, nobody look at me. I must breastfeed a human.
And so, okay, take me back to this airport toilet. I'm just wondering, so if your husband was
something
there,
you don't hear on a podcast every day. Take me back to the airport toilet.
Yeah. Let's go back. Let's go back to this tight situation. So is it one in, one out when you and your husband are then trying to juggle the situation with the baby in the propped up in a in a airport toilet? Like, are you, because you guys can't both fit in there.
Oh God, no. I go in by myself.
No, you can't go in by there.
Just twice. Me. And oh, the I thought
because you'd mentioned your husband blocking the table.
That's with him in there with his own body. When he goes in with his own body, it's like impossible. He was like, literally, he was like, I couldn't find it because I couldn't turn around enough see where it was. Yeah. And like, yeah, it was just, I love it. I don't know who this person, but Tweed Pawn in the comments is like, to be fair, airports aren't set up for any human. 100% true. It's
like, that's true. That's true.
They're set up to be like, nobody should be here. Everybody go home. And you're like, but this is the way, this is the place.
But we have to wait here for hours. Yeah. How is this not? Yeah. It's like, that's why. Oh.
Oh, bye, JJ. JJ. He was like, he's out. He doesn't want to talk anymore. He's over it.
Wow. JJ just, he's like, if we're not going to talk about airport toilets anymore, I'm leaving. It's like, all right. Okay. I think, or maybe that's all he wanted to hear and just left.
He was like, well, my topic's done. Have fun, guys.
Yeah, all right. I mean, I'll keep going. I mean, fine. I don't know where he went. I do want to ask because, I mean, JJ obviously knows you a little more than me, but, like, when did you start, like, comedy? Like, how because you say you're born in Nigeria, but did you grow up in Nigeria?
No. I moved to Canada. I grew up in Canada. I'm like the Homer Simpson of like jobs. So I used to be a professional athlete, played soccer.
Homer Simpson of jobs?
You know Homer Simpson? Have you ever like counted how many jobs he's had in The Simpsons? It's like.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Now again.
No,
okay,
he's like every, like these episodes where you're like, now he's an astronaut all
he's
of a sudden.
Now
okay,
he's
great.
The mascot. Yeah.
So I used to be a professional soccer player. Wow. And then I taught English for a while. And then I was trained to be a flight attendant, and then there was like a big strike with Boeing, so all of the training stopped, and so then I worked for a business development bank for a couple of years.
Wow.
And then I started my own company doing life coaching and motivational speaking for a few years, and I was a wedding planner for a while. Like, I legit had like all of the other things I've done.
Is this what led to the TEDx? Because I've seen your TEDx talk as well, which must have been quite the career highlight for you, I assume, unless maybe you were working in a motivational speaking thing and you're like, I had to do them all the time or something.
I
thought JJ was going to be like, well, that's great, but let's go back to the airport. It's like, nah, come on.
This is about bathrooms, right?
Also, you did all that. So, wow, that's a lot. So you did all those jobs while you were doing comedy?
Before.
Before, oh, wow.
Yeah. So I started comedy like when I turned 30. I started comedy.
Okay, wow.
Which I think people were like, really? That's interesting. Yeah. Because I started comedy and acting basically when I turned 30, and I was kind of like, I'm going to give this a go.
Why was that you always wanted to do it? No, because you did all this stuff and like, did you always wanted to do it?
No, I didn't always, like, it's interesting. I kind of sometimes feel like, you know, like you guys have heard of imposter syndrome where like you're into something and you're like, is this really happening? But like, I feel that way sometimes as a comedian, because it's not something that I always wanted to do. It's not like I watched albums when I was a kid, and so many people I talk to, like, it's almost like you get looked down on if it hasn't been your dream since
you
were five.
It's your passion. Yeah. Well, for me, it's the same thing. I only started when I was like 24. So it was like, it was late. Like I didn't even know I wanted to do it. So
yeah. And so then it's like, you don't know. I don't know as much about like the history of comedians, and like people tell it, like, I'm like, I don't know all of, you know, everybody's jokes, but I started off, I loved Saturday Night Live. Mm-hmm. And I remember just being like, someone asked me like, if you could do anything in the world, what would it be? And I was like, I'd be doing sketch comedy on Saturday Night Live.
And that's what Elon Musk said too, by the way.
Oh, when he was
because he actually hosted it. He's like, what else do you want to do? Oh, I can do it.
SNL that Elon Musk has had.
Yeah, I mean, that's his wish, which I don't know. I mean, that's, I guess, when you're rich, you can really do anything.
Yeah. He's like, I know how to get there. I'll start making electric cars, and then somehow that will lead me into SNL.
Sneaky. He's a smart motherfucker.
He knows what's up. But yeah, then I just was like, you know, at the time I was working at the business development bank, and like, it was just like, my life was not anywhere in the realm of those things. So I decided, I was like, oh, I'll take an acting class. and then through the acting class got a chance to try stand up. And I was literally like, right. Oh, scary, terrifying. I'm going to do this thing that's way outside my comfort zone one time so I can say I've done it. And then, of course, you know, yeah, that's the thing that I was like, oh, this is amazing. And I like it. Yeah, it's fun. Yeah. And it's stuck. And that's sort of become more of the identity than the other stuff I did previously. Like, a lot of people have no clue that I ever played sports or planned weddings or anything in this industry now, because they just know me as a comedian and an actor. But I did all those things for like a lot longer in span of my life than I have, you know, for a lot of other things. So.
And is it safe to say that that was the main catalyst that led you to move to Los Angeles, was once the comedy career was in full flow? So that
You started doing comedy. Sorry, you started doing comedy in Canada?
Yes, I started in Winnipeg, which is like not a big industry whatsoever. But then, you know, you become like, for acting and comedy, like you become a big fish in a small pond pretty quickly. And you get a lot of opportunities you wouldn't if you were other places. And Winnipeg is like a really cool city and has a lot of cool like arts and people doing like collaborations with like really cool people. Mm. So it's fun. You know, it was really fun and easy to get experience and get in. Yeah. And then I moved from there to Toronto, which is sort of like one of the big hubs for Canada. And then moved from Toronto to LA. But the real reason that, like, I was thinking, you know, one day I'd love to move to LA. But I ended up being a finalist for the NBC comedy, like the stand-up contest.
Diversity one?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I that's nice. I got to the, I forget, the semifinal.
Semifinals, yeah.
Like a while back, but yeah, which it was fun when I first started. I'm like, I always like, because they brought me up. It was in the Gotham and like the guy who was, I forget who it was, hosting, like, you know, they do this whole thing, you know, and like, they start clapping, right? Start clapping. And then they say the name, but it's like, I didn't hear my name. And then the people were like, hey, you're good. And then, like, you know, I was so new into it. I was like, so I got that nervous thing.
Yeah,
I'm like,
yeah.
So I went in
you're
right away.
Starting, like, kind
and
of like
I already started way. Bad. Yeah, like, you know, yeah. Obviously right now you go and like, and you say one joke and you go into it. But at that point I was like, hey.
And then like the semifinals too, like the, they're like short, like the sets are crazy short. It's not like you have like 7 to 10 minutes to like get your, like you have like time for one or two jokes and then it's like done.
Yeah.
Really?
So yeah, it's really short. So I was a finalist and got to do, I think it was like 5 minutes or something, but then they like flew me to LA, you know, and that was when they used to still come to Canada to do any of the recruiting.
Oh, they were doing it over there. Yeah.
They went to Vancouver. So I went to there, but, I performed at the Improv. Was the first place I ever performed in LA, because that was where they were having
the final. Okay, yeah.
And then I got an American agent from that set, and then the next year I came for like, you know, different things and stuff like that. And I was coming to the States to do a lot of touring for colleges.
Yeah.
And had all these opportunities to audition and stuff, but didn't have the right visa to work. So I got opportunities and then couldn't take them because you know, it's the wrong visa. So I was just like, what am I doing? Let me just get this green card.
Did you have?
I had a P1, which lets you come and do live performance, and that's it. So I could only do stand-up.
Yeah, and you have to be in a troupe as well, don't you, I think?
It's like kind of like a weird, like, I don't know. Like, in the end, I think it ends up being, I don't know if even know if it still exists, but it started off to be like, if you're part of, like, these groups, then you can come and do it. And so, like, our agency had, like, a group of performers. But you know, sometimes you would go through the border and they're like, what is this? And sometimes they're like, oh yeah, I know, you're just a live performer. Like, it was just like,
some people knew, some people didn't, which it makes it annoying, because then if you get the person who's like, I don't know what this is, and start asking you questions. Yeah.
I used to have to go to secondary questioning all the time for that. And then when I was waiting for my green card to come through, I had like the EAD, which allows you to work while you're waiting for the green card. In order to go through like the immigration, there was no other way. You always had to go through secondary questioning because they had some stamp that was back there that you needed. I knew all of the people who worked in secondary questioning in LA and in Toronto. They'd be like, hey, what's going on?
What's
How was
up?
Your show?
Yeah.
Like, everyone else in there has been like caught for like smuggling or something. Yeah, I mean, just reading books and like having a good old time. And they're like, who's this girl? Yeah. Why is she here?
Yeah, I had the same thing happen to me, because when I had the green card and I would always, every time I travel international, I would always get stopped to go to that secondary thing. So, like, it got to a point where, like, I knew, like, I was like, yeah, I know. And then I asked one guy, I was like, why do I get stopped all the time? He's like, and the guy's like, well, it's like, the thing is, like, your Francisco Ramos is some kind of like a drug deal that they're looking for.
Serial killer.
Yeah, or something like that. And then they were like, and then my middle name is Eduardo. So it's like, and Eduardo Ramos is another one. So that's why I was like, oh, I get, so that's, and then finally when I became a citizen, I combined my two last names to make it one name. So then that would stop happening.
Alleviate. Because, you know, there's a thing you can get. I think it's called a redress number. Have you heard of this?
No, yeah, I have that.
You have it. Okay, because I was like, I remember people being
Sorry, the TSA? Oh, no, that's different.
No. This is a different. This is specifically for that problem where if there's somebody else with your name who's a red flag, you can get a specific number that you enter in, which will differentiate you from that person. Oh. And then you just go through with that number and they don't stop you as much because they're like, oh, this isn't that Francisco.
Yeah.
This isn't
I used my other last name because my mom was like, you gotta, because my Ramos is my dad's last name. So that's like my stage name. So my mom would always like, you gotta use my name too. It's like, come on, you people have to. So,
honoring your mother in this way.
But it's like, I mean, it's like, come on, mom. It's like, really relax.
I'm like, with my kid, I'm like, I wasn't going to change my name. I was like, I don't understand why women are expected to like just give up their identity when they get married. But then with our kid, I was like, oh no, he's going to have my last name. And so now we have like a hyphen. I mean, our hyphenated names are like good, but like so many people are like, oh, so did you give him, you know, your husband? I'm like, no, I carried him. I'm like, this is my body. He better have something of my name with him. You know?
Yeah, I think it should always be the two names, you know?
I agree. I mean,
put the mom's name first. I mean, last name first. It shouldn't be, you know, it shouldn't be like you said, you're the one doing everything.
I'm the number one. Yeah. If he gets his last name on this kid, he's lucky. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Like he cannot have a kid without you, literally.
Exactly. So he may have others without me, but I don't know.
Okay. So then you were doing the final interview, you got the green card, and that's when you moved to LA, or it was easier to move to LA.
I applied for it. You can apply while you're in the States with this one. I don't know if it's everybody, but like for sure from Canada, they have like an agreement where if you apply, you just can't leave while they're processing it.
Which can be hard
for like some people, but I was already working, you know, on the other visa. So I could just switch it over to this visa and work and stay here. But that took a year for them to process. And I moved here right when Trump was inaugurated.
Doing that whole thing.
All right.
My 1 year long waiting was like before Trump made it more difficult. So I have friends who have tried then when he, you know, in the last 4 or 5 years, and like everything got delayed so much more. They were stuck here. They couldn't. It was such a disaster for them.
That happened to me and my sister when we were trying to become getting the green card, and because it happened during 9/11.
Before
9/11, it was like so easy, like everybody was like giving it. But then, it was a thing that lasted long, like three or four years longer than it should have because of that. Yeah. Because they kept, oh no, we need this, and now we need this, and we couldn't leave at all. So we were basically stuck like 3 or 4 years without being able to travel internationally because
of that. So crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I came here in the Trump era as well. I talk about it a lot, how I moved here just when everybody got very pessimistic. I just arrived ready for the Obama party. And I just arrived to like two sides of a coin that were both angry at each other. And I spent some time in that secondary questioning room as well. But my case was because I was on my second visa at the time, I think. And I had like a month left on it. And then my new one was coming, and this particular agent, they make up their own rules on the fly, don't they?
Oh yeah, you gotta be able to. So, hopefully, you get the cool one. Like,
yeah,
you like Aisha was saying, like she knew everybody already, so it's probably
so
like, easy.
I had no such luck, and I'm in that back room, and I was trying to tell the agent who's already angry at me. He's going, "Well, you have a month left on the visa, and that's not enough for me. I'm not going to allow you back in the country with only a month." And then I said, "Well, my new one is coming. It's being processed right now. My lawyer says that everything will be fine." And he's like, "Your lawyer's not here right now, is he?" And I was like, "This is not going well." And then he came over and he made me choose between like Ottawa, Montreal, or Vancouver. And I was like, "Why?" He goes, "That's where we're sending you." And I was like, "But I don't live in any of those places."
I didn't even live I'll take Hawaii.
I lived in London. I was like, London, can you send me to Britain? But I didn't want to do any of those things. But anyway, and then he left in a huff. And then another security guard came over, and she was very nice. She came over and she goes, when he comes back, just tell him you'll do whatever you have to do, and he'll let you in on a holiday visa.
And that's where you tie your hair in a ponytail. So that's where.
Yes, Francisco. That was my first lesson.
Yada yada yada. I always travel with mouthwash.
Wait, did you just yada 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 blow in a federal agent? It's like. But
she did, like, but she had to get
what the yada, yada, yada. It's like, what? I, what? But you missed everything. It's like, no, I mentioned the best part, mouthwash. I'm a huge Seinfeld fan, so that's why.
Yeah. I love it. My dad references Seinfeld for everything in life.
Oh, so I love to meet. I want to go have drinks with her dad. I would just
God. This is like little Nigerian man with a beret just making Seinfeld references that no one gets. Yeah.
I love that. That's what I do all the time. So then you got, okay, well, all right. So you basically moved to LA to start.
Before we get to LA, I'm just curious. Starting off in Winnipeg, Winterpeg, as my father so affectionately called it growing up.
It is very cold and very long winters and beautiful hot summers. It's delightful.
Yeah. My father's a military man. He was stationed up there for a while. But I was going to say that move to Toronto, I'm always curious. Like, did you do that with other comics, or did you just kind of suck it up and go, I'm going on my own. I'm going to go to the hub of Canada, the comedy, you know, the big comedy city.
Yeah, no, I left.
Friends with me.
I mean, like, I love Winnipeg, and I think like my homies are my Winnipeg guys. You know what I mean? That I started comedy with. Like, they're the people who I will always like big up. I will always make sure that they're taken care of. If there's gigs people want me to do in Winnipeg, I'm like, you got to hire this person. Like, I'm like, I love those guys so much. And none of them were, I've always been a person who, you know, I've traveled the world. I've like changed jobs many times. I was never afraid of change. So this idea of just like up and moving to a different
city
wasn't a big deal. And it was for a lot of my friends, but like, I never considered not going because I was going alone, basically. You know, it wasn't about doing it for somebody else. I was doing it for me. And I'm like, I can fly home anytime. I was still doing gigs back and forth. Like, it wasn't a big deal.
Yeah, see, I found things like that, like, more enjoyable. Like, I moved to Scotland on my own. And then to further my comedy career, I moved down to London with a couple of other comics from Scotland. But overall, I liked doing these things on my own. Because you'll never fail in front of friends, you know. Because you can put pressure on yourself and you can do your own pursuits, but you don't have those friends on your side, you know, going, why are you're gonna have a go at stand-up comedy, you're gonna try to do this, you know.
Well,
you don't
I have think the it just makes way. It like it's just like traveling on your own, right? Like, you make better choices. And not to say that you shouldn't go anywhere with your friends or whatever like that, but if you are by yourself, you make the choice that's best for you at that time in that moment. So whether that's like, I want to go to like all these 7 shows, where I want to do a bunch of touring, or I want to like where you want to live, and like all that kind of stuff is not influenced by anybody else.
Yeah.
And you might have friends that are amazing that influence you in great ways, but like, you just don't have any risk of having somebody take you off your path or away from your dream or any of that kind of stuff.
And I think that also helps with like, especially when you're doing something new, like that, like your passion or dream or whatever it is, I think it makes you take those risks by yourself, which makes you learn more about yourself and who you are as a person.
It's more valuable
because if you have somebody with you, then you're like, what do you think? It's like, no, you're just like, this is what, which also then makes you, for me, it helped me go and like realize what I like and what I don't like, because I grew up with like being very like people pleaser, and like I was always like, what are my friends are doing? And my, and all this stuff. And then, but then when I was in LA, I would say when I moved to LA is when I started living my own life, you know, okay, this is what I like to do. And this is what these are the people I like to hang out with. These are people I don't like to hang out with. And then makes it better, especially for relationships, because then you start meeting people and you're like, oh yeah, I don't like you at all. Bye. I'm not going to waste. Like, get the hell out of here. Like, I'm like, before I would be like, like, well, I want them to like me. And I'm like, yeah. Now I'm like, bye. I have to do other stuff. So I think that traveling by yourself is so huge, especially when you're doing something for yourself, like your job, a dream or passion, whatever it is.
Yeah. I think, yeah. I mean, I get like a lot of people are not like into traveling by themselves. Oh, what's this person? I always feel weird about traveling by myself.
Yeah. Do you want to answer that for
me? You know what? I get that. There's
here, I'll read the question out for anybody. Some people might be listening on Spotify or something. So hello, Spotify. Hello, you spoiled brats. Here you go. You get your question read to you.
Here's a question from TweetPod.
Here's a question from TweetPod. I always feel worried about traveling by myself on a trip as a woman. Where is your favorite place to travel to, Aisha?
So I first just want to address the first part where it is different.
I want to answer that question too, because I love that. It's like, I'm always worried about traveling as a woman. So what? Yeah. You like spaghetti? Wait, what? Yeah. What about the first thing?
traveling on your own as a woman, there are some real risks because there are places, first of all, where that's actually not even allowed and it's not safe and it's not okay. And so it's like, you've got to actually do the research beforehand, but there are lots of places that you would think it would be scary and it's not. So, you know, it's that stuff, but it's also like certain types of people are better travelers. Like I'm a no nonsense, you know, I can wear the same shirt for 3 days. I'm not wearing diamond rings when I'm traveling. Yeah. Like I'm
you have to be smart about your environment.
Like smart environment. Like I can handle myself in a lot of situations. And so I have taken some dumb risks. Let's be real. Sometimes I look back at some of the things I've done when I'm traveling and I'm like, ooh, I should definitely be dead like 7 times at least. You know, like there's for sure times where I was like, this is where I die. Well, it was a good life.
Yeah.
But it is there. As long as you are street smart and you're not like gullible, because some people are just gullible and like that.
I mean, like, I don't know if it's, I think there's a thing that we all are connected with, like being just immigrants, you know, living in different countries. I think just doing that makes you that street smart stuff of like, oh, I can't, because I, you know, like for me, I'm always, especially I grew up in Venezuela, even little, like I have that spider sense of like, every time there's danger, like my spider sense of like, I know like, okay, this, like, I'm not going to be wearing my watch and being like, hey, I'm a tourist. You know, this, by the way, this is what I do when I travel. I just go, everybody, I'm in Rome and I'm like, I'm in the Colosseum. But you got to be like.
Those impressions are out of the park, man.
So good.
But yeah, you gotta be like you said, street smart. You gotta like not be gullible, not you know, and also be willing to take risks and be willing to say no and be willing to have like be tough.
Be willing to like not be the people pleaser, because sometimes you're gonna be like, this doesn't feel safe, and people are like, what's your problem? And then you just have to be like, I don't have to do this. Like,
I don't have to explain it to you. Yeah.
But I think there is something about being an immigrant that makes you, especially from certain, like I'm, you know, my family's from Nigeria, my dad's Nigerian, I'm half Nigerian. I feel like there's like this spidey sense for sure that comes out from having traveled many times to Nigeria, where I'm like, I don't trust anybody. Like no matter what you say, I'm always like, my first thing is not trusting. And then I will like learn to.
I think that comes also from being like, I mean, for me, I grew up like in a third world country thing where like, you cannot trust anybody. Like you're literally going like, I'm always, even here when I park in my house or stuff like that, I go like, who's that? You know, I'm like, my girlfriend is like from North Carolina. Sometimes she's like, and I'm like, look, let's move to this. Look at that guy. I don't know. Like, and it's like, he's like, you can't judge. He's like, I'm judging. Cause I don't know if he's going to rob us or not. Yeah. Like, we'll
I'm
see.
Like, you got to like the level of like not trusting people as a default is really good. For traveling and for like negotiating deals and all these things is real bad for relationships. You know what I mean? I'm like, I'm learning. Right. So I can trust my husband who I have a child. But I mean, there is something about that, like that makes you a little bit more of a, you're less prey. People can see that you don't trust them. So they're not going to come and like low.
And also like con people prey on people who are nice and and gullible. So it's like once
and they often choose women first. So
But once they know, once they but they come if they meet somebody like you, for example, right away they go like, oh, I cannot fool this person. So they don't waste their time with you. They don't waste their time.
If anything, they might think I'm trying to con them. So they're like,
Right?
That's why I was saying, I'm like,
is she really pregnant or is it just supposed to put me at ease? And then she snags my wallet and runs.
To be the safest possible, you just have to be the one that is the least trustworthy in the room when you are traveling, and everyone else will stay away from you or appear to be that way. That's all you need. You just have to be the scariest one. I have a joke actually about when I was 16, when I went on that trip to France. And, you know, I was the first time I was like on a big trip away with no parents. It was like a school trip. And my girlfriend and I, we broke away from the crowd. And we were like, we're going to go get alcohol and like be sophisticated ladies in a bar. And like, you know, it's France. They don't care. They're like, you're 13. You're allowed to drink. They don't give a shit. But like, we went and we ordered drinks. And these like young guys sat down with us and were chatting us up. They were from Switzerland. And my friend was like making out with one of the guys. And then his brother was like young, so I was like, I can't, like, this isn't gonna work for me. I don't want to hang with this kid. But then their dad came, and I was like, I'm gonna have an adult conversation with an adult while I have a drink. And I was chatting with him, and he's like, I was like, oh, you're from Switzerland, like, you guys have really good chocolate there. And he's like, yeah, actually, I have chocolate here with me. And I was like, yeah, cool, can I have some? So, and he's like, yeah, it's just in my car. Like, this is not a word of lie. It's in my car in the back. So we leave this bar. I've had some drinks, you know, we go behind the bar in a dark alley, and there's, kid you not, a van.
Oh, van.
There is a van.
Oh my God. You went to a man's van for candy.
Right. And then he opens the van door and he's like, go ahead. And I go into the van and the lights turn on when it goes on, and his whole van is just boxes of chocolates, because he is there on a work trip delivery. He's a chocolate, like, works for a chocolate company.
That's just complete luck.
And so he gave me chocolates, and I went on my merry way. And I was like, this is why. But my joke is always that, like, I think this guy wanted to, like, you know, rape and murder me, but he was like, this bitch is crazy. I'm not taking chances with her. Like, this.
I think he was probably like, this is too easy. Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, there's a catch. No, I'm not doing it. Take your chocolates and get out of here, lady. It's
never been this easy. It must be entrapment.
Exactly. Yeah.
Blood of taken. You know,
exactly. I was more willing than the participants.
Yeah,
take
it. And the guy, the one in the van was Willy Wonka. It was like, come with me.
The first time I ever told that story, someone's like, "So you, like, exactly what you said, JoJo. So you went with a man to get chocolates out of a van. Okay, so you should have for sure been dead by now." I'm like, that's just one of many, you know. Remarkable. It's crazy, but
that is one of those ones where, like, yeah, I was the universe, God, whatever you believe in, like, was there to protect you.
Totally.
I think 9 out of 10 times the bad thing happens. Like,
more than 9.99%.
Yeah. I mean, it's like the dad. I mean, everything. It was like. Oh, and the fact that the guy went is like, go inside.
I know, like, you go first. Yeah. I mean, this is how Silence of the Lambs starts. You know, when they're moving the furniture, it's like you move them in first. You shut the doors. Like, what are you, a size 12? Like, that's what.
Holy cow! With safety in mind, considering now that we know you so much better, and I know that now that you can definitely take care of yourself if you're going to confidently walk to a man's van for candy.
Yeah,
and. But have you ever had to, like, bail or cancel something, maybe because you showed up and, like, the accommodation or the way they're looking after you isn't up to scratch? I asked this because actually in 2019, when I was in Europe, a woman who was supposed to be touring with me, she did cancel on a, we showed up at an Airbnb. Mm-hmm. And I guess, I'm a tall man. So I guess I can take more risks, or when I, promoter gets dodgy and goes, I know I promised you like a Holiday Inn, but here we got this thing. I often can say, all right, I'll stay here, but fucking stay out of my room, you know, or whatever. But she canceled. She's like, no, I'm going. I'm not doing the show or anything unless you present the Holiday Inn to me.
Yeah.
Right.
I was wondering, do you have similar stories like that of incidents?
Which I would have done the same thing. I would have been like, yeah, you promised me a Holiday Inn.
Yeah.
I'm going to some cheap ass hotel.
Yeah. Anytime someone switches things, without telling you and you show up and they just present it to you, I'm always like, there's something going on here. And there may be nothing going on, but I think that like...
But it's already a bad vibe.
It's a bad vibe and it's bad business because then you never know if they're going to be like, well, I said I was going to pay you, you know, $1,000, but really it's only $850. And like, it's like all that stuff, that stuff should never change. Like if you negotiate something and it's in a contract, if they change it, it should only be changed upwards. Or they should let you know before you leave. Yeah. So you can
or cancel it. Or cancel it before you travel. But don't, like, when you get there, like, oh, yeah, by the way, this happened. That's always the shady weird.
Yeah.
It happens so much in our industry as well. They do try it all the time.
I forgot to answer the second question. Which
is good. About where I would like to travel.
Your favorite place to travel.
Oh, yes.
I mean, I have a love affair with France. I went there. I've gone many times. What's that? Because it's a chocolate story. Yeah. It's like that. I think that's the first real trip I did on my own, like a way where I got to make choices and experience culture and stuff like that. So I'm very partial to the whole country, but specifically to the south of France, which is where I studied French. And it's just like, I love the beach and I love the like super laid back, like way of life. Like you know, you go for a walk, you go to the bakery to buy a bread. So if you go to the fromagerie to get like a cheese, like every place is different. And it takes the whole day. It's like, I just love that lifestyle of like just chill. Like why do we have to rush? Why do we have to work so much?
Way of living, which is like you work to live.
Yeah.
American way is you live to work.
Opposite.
Yeah. The opposite.
Isn't it? Yeah. Like the opposite. Yeah. So I like that idea of life is more important than money.
Yes.
So let's just chill. So I think France is the south of France, even the way they speak in the south of France is like, ah oui, bonjour. It's like a very much more like laid back. Exactly. It's like islands of like that kind of feel.
Or any coast cities. They're like, it's always more like, hey, what's up? ¿Qué pasó?
Yeah. Island time, chill vibe. Yeah. So that's one place that I love. I recently have fallen in love with Hawaii, which I did not think I would.
I haven't been there. I want to go.
It's like, it is so beautiful and it feels like you're in Jurassic Park. Like, it's just so beautiful. And like, there's so much good food and it's just a lovely, but I totally get why people go.
Chill vibe, right?
Yes. Aloha lifestyle. Like, it's like, I get why people go, like some people go yearly. You know what I mean? Because I was always like, why would you go back to the same place all the time? But like, it is just... There's so many different things. There's so much to offer. And it's stunning. Like, it's just Mother Nature, you know? It's beautiful. And for us here, it's a one flight, not too far.
Yeah, right, yeah. It's, it's only a few things that are close from LA.
Yeah. So it's, I've been to Hawaii. I've only been twice, but I've loved it. I went for my honeymoon, where I made a baby. Yeah. And I went back while I was pregnant, when I had the baby in my belly. And I was like... Great times.
Nice.
Oh, great. Big Island, Honolulu.
We went to a couple different places. So we were in Lanai, which is like a very small private island. This is for our honeymoon. And it was actually super creepy because the whole island is like owned by one guy and all the businesses and houses are owned by one, like super gazillionaire. And
there
so,
was
like,
a story like that in the news recently about some guy, it sounds familiar, like an Epstein type. That's not creepy.
Like, it was like, I mean, Epstein has his own like little private island, but this is like if imagine, I don't know, like an John area. Hammond. What's that?
What's his name? John Hammond?
No, it was
that's a Jurassic Park joke. If
Ellison, what's his name? Who owned, anyway, I can't remember the name, I don't know all these millionaire names, but.
I only know billionaire's name, sorry.
Yeah. Just picture like if it was like, okay, all of Studio City was an island and every house in Studio City was also owned by the same person. All the land and all the businesses were all owned by the same person.
That's funny. Like I just went to Montana this weekend for shows and Ted Turner basically owns like half of Montana.
Which is crazy because then it's like, so like these people, if they worked for the person who was also their landlord. So if they lost their job, they also lost their house and had to leave the island, legit just had to go. So we were like, there on our honeymoon, and everyone's like, hello and welcome to the, like, it was like robots. It was like Westworld. Yeah. And then we asked, like, what's this guy really like? And they're like, he is a lovely human being who we all love. You're like, well,
and then they're like, please, please.
Yeah, they're like blinking twice to like
holy body snatchers.
It was really crazy. But I mean, like, so yeah, that part was kind of creepy. But
wait, are you sure you came back? Because it might be like you might still be over there, and you're like, it's like, hi, Joe.
Roboting
best island ever.
Everybody go to Hawaii.
I recommend it to everybody. Yeah.
Yeah, but I would say those are two of my favorite places to travel. That I've loved. I mean, there's so many places. I traveled through Australia by myself and like had the time of my life, but. I also feel like Australia has a lot of issues that are hard for women because it's just such a sexist community.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, it's pretty sexist. I mean, I had a really fun time because I was like, I like to go out and dance. I like to have drinks. I like to eat red meat. You know what I mean? So it's like that stuff is all like a lot there.
You're
but
like, you're like, there's something about Mary. Like you're Mary. Like, yeah, I love sports. I play professional sports. I love to drink. I love to meet.
I think I've just been surrounded by too many dudes in my whole life that, like, you know, I'm now like, right. Oh, also I can do my hair and get a manicure. Hello.
And when you're traveling, what do you do? Like, do any hobbies or stuff that you do while you're traveling? Especially like by yourself when you're like gigging and stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm a big like food. I love trying food. So when I was doing a lot of college, you know, touring, you know, and if you've done that, you know, it's like,
I know, you're in the
middle of nowhere doing nothing with like, you know, 18-year-olds being like, do you want to come to the bar with us? And you're like, this is awesome.
Nope.
Yeah. But I love to find a couple places in every, or in the surrounding areas or in every city that I go to, that's like a really well-reviewed lunch spot or something like that. And then I'll take like public transit for like 2 hours if I have to get to that place and have like, you know, have something that's really from that community.
Yeah.
And then like a really great coffee shop or something like that. So I'm like, I pick food places everywhere I go that I want to try out. That's like my big thing. I remember I went on one of the college trips with Nick Guerra.
Yeah, I know Nick.
Yeah, he's lovely. And so when we got to one of them, actually, they didn't have a hotel room for him. So we had a sleepover. We had one hotel room for the two of us and like two beds. And we were like, let's tell like ghost stories. You're like, it was like a classic like sleepover from when you were a kid. But then I forced him to go to this random Chinese noodle shop that was like in the middle of nowhere. It was in Chicago, like an area, like I think it was Chicago actually. And he's like, let's go to like a Chicago thing. I'm like, no, but this like noodle place was like really well reviewed.
Pizza. No, noodle.
I'm like, this is not even anything to do with like Chicago, but we went and it was really good. And then we had like great, like, you know, it was ridiculous and really funny, but stuff like that where I'm like, it's not even always from like the famous thing from that city, it's something that's going to show you more of the culture.
That can be just as memorable, you know, like there's like in London, when I have somebody in London, they always want to do more London and touristy stuff. But I like there's this the Maid Gwen, which is this bar that's about the size of 8 people. Total. It's the smallest bar in Britain.
Closet.
And it's basically it's a little bit like a closet. And it spills out onto the walkway and stuff. And I always have to. You know, make a call when people are like, let's go to, you know, these other places. I'm like, no, I got to take it to the Maid Gwen, this little tiny bar. So, you know, that's my London. And, and I always let super see. So I can totally feel that if you got your Chicago and you want to show that to somebody that you're with.
I'm not sure I would take anyone to my Chicago being the Chinese noodle place again, but it was so fun. But I still, I'm like, I think that you need to do like a mix. Like I like going places. I like to, you know, if you go to Paris, you got to see the Eiffel Tower, Champs-Élysées and all that kind of stuff. But there's so much other stuff is not those big things. Like I kind of like
it's not the touristy stuff. I like doing like I think a mix. It's like if it's your first time, you got to see the touristy stuff. But but also mix it up with like I want to see the stuff that people
want to feel like I live there.
Yeah, like live here, like experience of people. You know, like going to a van and eating chocolate. You know, like that. I want that. I want that thing.
That's one of the attractions in the Lonely Planet books now, you know, like the scary van and the man. Great.
We all have dreams. At least we know a way to your heart now. Just
Just chocolate.
Well,
in a van.
Hopefully the chocolate is the important part. But,
no, it's a van. I don't like chocolate.
I like to be terrified before I get my treats. You know, it's really that's what Halloween is.
It's for me. So I'm so happy for what we've learned about you tonight. Fantastic, man. Francisco, you got any? It's been we're on an hour, Aisha, but it's flying by because you're such a good conversationalist. So we're cracking along at quite the
time. Yeah, I mean, I have one last thing because especially because you travel so much all over the world. Is there anything that you like to bring that would you like to people here in the U.S. do, like a custom or like a something that people do in other countries that are like? That'd be like, I wish people here would do it in the U.S. or something like that. You know, like a custom or
things from other places.
Or a tradition. Yeah.
Yeah, like we've had, people have mentioned, like, food? I want to say siesta time.
Yeah, like siesta, for example.
I mean, who can do with, like, not having more naps? But
You know what? I'll say one on behalf of Aisha's, paid maternal leave. That would be nice in America. Hey, America, why don't you do that?
Yeah, well, even just vacation in general, I think, like, all other countries, they give you, like, at least a month of vacation or 2 months, so people go, and here's like 2 weeks and that's it, and you got to spread that out in the whole year.
It's friggin' mental, man. Like in some places, some Western world places, it's for men as well. There's like, mandatory male leave as well, which would go a long way to evening out the wage gap and everything. But we don't need to get into that.
Here's my thing, actually, I think. And I think maybe it's because I've traveled lots of places and I love to eat. Yeah. And this is one thing that I wish happened more in North America is communal eating. So in like Nigeria, I don't know, like a big pot of pho for everybody.
No, sorry. Yeah. I don't know why I said, communal thing because I remember going to the first time I tried pho was in DC when I was living there and the restaurant was like, it was like a cafeteria table.
All sitting. So not even one step further than that. I love like all sitting together, but like in Nigeria, in Korea, like you go for kalbi or something and like there's like multiple people all sort of eating off the same plate and you're sharing and you're doing all this stuff. And basically it usually takes longer because you're like, there's multiple courses and there's multiple things happening. When I lived in Korea, I loved kalbi, which is a big barbecue in the middle of the table. Multiple people sitting at it, and then you like slowly grill a few pieces of meat.
Oh, like Benihana
thing. I don't know Benihana.
Oh, you don't know Benihana?
Well, that would be the commercial version of
the commercial. Yeah, it's the American version.
Yes,
the
tradition.
Is that the one where they're like where they cook it for you?
Yeah, they go like.
So this is you cook it yourself. It's not like that. It's like you literally each table you. It's like if I had people over for a dinner party. And they put a grill in the middle and then we put down a bunch of like many, like if you watch it, if you look at a Korean meal, if you go for like a Korean meal with your friends, there's like 50 different dishes on the table and then you cook them in the middle and you just sort of like each are helping yourself. There's no one like in charge of it all or anything like that.
Got it.
Yeah.
But it's basically you're sharing.
Is that here?
That's basically, Korea, I was going to say, Francisco, yes, in Koreatown here,
they
yes,
have a lot of
all those restaurants will work like that. I took my parents last time I was here because I was dating somebody who's big. She taught English for a while in South Korea and stuff, and so she's a
Did
big,
you just say you're dating someone who was big? Did you just call them big?
I did not.
I was dating her. She was real big. Okay, let me just say this.
I did not. Unfortunately, the only person I've called big so far has been you, Aisha. I still regret it. But no, she was a big Koreaphile, if I can call it that.
That's like me. I love
never have a boss when and, you say big.
So I took her to, took my parents, she and I took my parents to Koreatown. My father, because that the heater, or whatever you want to call it, the grill starts going in the middle, and then all that raw meat comes around, and you got to put it on the thing. And my Nova Scotian parents were a bit freaked out by it. They were freaked out by a well-used kind of barbecue-looking thing, and then putting these little slabs of, I can tell that they were off the idea of the meal quickly. which was a weird thing when your girlfriend is so excited and really wants to show them this, and they just
that's when the relationship was over.
We could chat forever about that, but yeah, just to have these two baby boomer Canadians kind of, because I mean, curry Indian food didn't even come to Halifax until whatever, like probably 15 years. Oh yeah, so they're not. So they don't have a lot of foreign food experience in this whole
Maybe you should have taken. Maybe you should have you should have told your girlfriend at the time, be like, let's start at the first level of Korean food. Like, don't go to level 5. Like,
let's go for bubble tea. And then we'll move on.
Let's start with
it. Very funny that you're saying this, because I did. I said that to her, and she's like, "Fine," because she's a foodie and she really wanted. So then the next night, we took my parents out here to for Asian food, and she ordered spicy food. And I was like, "They're not ready for that either." They're So I was like two nights in a row. So I had to revoke her. I was like, tomorrow night, babe, we're going to a taco truck. And that's it. That's his
taco. That's so spicy.
Even tacos, I feel like they probably wrote home about that in Nova Scotia. Yeah. They're probably like,
you should have said,
amazing meal.
Tomorrow night, we're going to IHOP.
Yeah.
Getting pancakes, and that's it.
International pancakes.
There you go, mom and dad.
Okay. So that'd be cool. Yeah. To hopefully, that bring more of that communal.
I think it's because I like to try a variety of things. And here it's like order one dish and then people, and I'm like a sharer. I want to share and stuff.
So you like tapas, a tapas restaurant?
Tapas. Yeah. Give me a good tapas restaurant. I love tapas. Love.
That's fun too. Yeah.
So good.
Did you go in, before, because we're almost done here, but since you're a good foodie, is there any good restaurants here in LA? Because I love so like to eat. That you recommend, like Korean,
honestly, for Korean, I have found one. I can't remember the name of it right now, but it's a dish that not everybody knows. It's called dak galbi, and it's like it's still the communal thing in the middle, but it's chicken with this spicy red sauce and like a bunch of vegetables, and then you like cook it and eat it, and then halfway through they like cut it up and put rice on top and make a stir fry. So there's like two levels of it. But if you can find a place that serves dak galbi, LK Kalbi, basically, that is like one of the underrated Korean foods that is not as well known.
Good to know.
So that is a big one. And then I don't know, Pache? Do you guys know Pache?
Yeah, the pizza place.
It's like pizza and
but the one in Laurel Canyon.
In Laurel Canyon, they make their own pasta though. Their pasta is like,
I've been there. It's a great restaurant. Yeah.
And then get the they'll ask you in the very beginning. They're like, do you, for dessert, when you're like still thinking about appetizers, I'll be like, do you want to get this chocolate cake? It takes half an hour to make. Even if you don't think you want it. Just order it. It's so good.
Yeah, that restaurant is great. It's so good. I've ordered
We got it for Mother's Day just the other day. My husband.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, so yummy. But so like, it's just like simple. There's nothing super crazy, different or fancy about it. It's just really.
Well some things when they're like, just not fancy, but they're like well made. Those are really, really good. Yeah.
Keep it simple.
That's awesome. Well, Pache and Kaldabi. How do you say it?
Takkalbi.
Takkalbi. Okay. Awesome.
I only know bulgogi, but I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is yet.
Thinly shaved meat with like a sweet soy kind of marinade. It's also delicious, but it's like eating candy meat.
Very good.
Now I'm hungry.
Yeah,
I'm like I think I forgot. I'm like
just drooling as we start.
Starving now too. Aisha, that's killer. Thank you so much for joining us, and that was really awesome. I feel like I've learned a lot from a human being and a pregnant lady.
Yes, some things I'm telling you not to do in life, and some things that I'm like, go for it. Thanks. It was so great. It was such a lovely chat, and all your fans on here are so wonderful. Thanks for all these great comments and stuff. And you guys will have to come on our Shout Out Show podcast sometime too. Individually, we do.
Yeah, yeah, we don't. I don't want to. JJ. We don't do everything together.
Yeah, we have too many differing opinions about airport lounges.
I mean, I know the bathroom in the airplane. Wait, how did you get in through green card? Well, let me show you. Yeah.
One moment, please.
They see this hair come and they're like, "All right, all we're gonna do is deny this guy for 10 minutes. We're good. Everybody, get ready.
You're up this week, Bob. Get over here. We've got one for you.
Yeah. Oh God. Aisha, on the way out the door, we always ask our guests one last question, and I mean, I feel like you've already answered this in a lot of levels, but if something pops into your mind here, then we'll have struck gold again. The final question is: do you have one important piece of like travel advice that you'd love to hand down to people? It can be your own or something you inherited from
this is so else. Dumb and so simple. Always bring Ziploc bags.
Nah, I do that.
That's really right? good.
It's yeah. so good because it's like some if you have a wet shirt and you need to pack it or whatever, you put it in the Ziploc. Ziploc bags come in so handy and they're so mm-hmm. easy to pack and just throw into like a compartment.
Yeah.
And
I've
never been like, I wish I hadn't packed these Ziploc bags.
Yeah, yeah.
I wish I bought Ziploc bags and brought them. Yeah, and you can reuse them. Like, yeah. It's so simple, but it really has saved me.
And also, it's great. I use it to put, like, sometimes, like, stuff that can spill. Or, you know, like, so because then it doesn't spill and then it messes up all your clothes and other stuff.
Or you're in, like, a lounge and you're like, you know what? I want a couple more of these cookies to bring with me. Ziploc bag, throw them in there, bring Ziplocs.
That's a great idea.
That's a killer. That's the
actually, you know what?
That's top five of our advice that we've gotten.
I think that's the best one. Because I sometimes travel just with Ziploc bags. Nothing else. I don't bring anything else. A big Ziploc bag.
You have a big Ziploc bag with many inside.
Check myself in the Ziploc bag. So I'm like.
You just made me realize that quite often when I check into a hotel, the first thing I steal or take, well, not steal, it's not of value, is the bin liner out of the hotel bin to usually put clothes in, to put like dirty.
You know,
dirty
you have the laundry one too.
The laundry bags are made of fabric.
To put clothes. The other one's for trash.
Another debate. Too thick. Too thick. The big fabric bag.
That's awesome.
Bags. We're all in agreement is that we have to have bags while you travel.
Yes.
Whether it's a trash bag or a Ziploc or we're all in agreement.
I think that's a cracking idea.
Yeah. Thank you very much for joining us. It was awesome. Thanks, it was great to meet you. Congrats again with your baby. And thanks again. And we'd love to hopefully do your podcast
And I can't wait to like see you guys in person when we get back to doing live shows again.
Slowly but surely we're getting better.
You and I met at the Comedy Store a couple of years ago, and so that'll be nice. That I owe you a beer. Next time I can see you at the Comedy Store, I'll buy you a beer.
Yes, she can't drink because she's pregnant.
Well, it's the gesture that counts.
I'll be like, hi, JJ member. First thing, buy the beer. Have it on the podcast.
You
definitely got a deal. Thank you very much, Aisha.
So fun. Thank you.
Have a good rest of the night, guys. Bye-bye. Bye.